Well, welcome back.
Well, we last left David HaMelech, so things are working out more or less. So this is the 43rd in the series. I want to thank Becky and Avi Katz for sponsoring. We last saw David last year. He had begun planning for the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, but he was thwarted in his efforts, and then he embarked on a new derech as the king. He consolidated his reign by defeating and humbling all his foreign enemies, but all of them. That's Perek Ches. Plishtim, Moab, Tsova, Aram, until the Navi says, Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael. David reigned over all Israel. Vayhi David oseh mishpat tzedakah lechol amo. And David was involved in nothing less than doing justice and righteousness wherever he went. In Eretz Yisrael, for the first time, really for the first time since they entered the land in Yeshua's time, was completely at peace, having conquered almost all of Eretz Yisrael, if not all of it, awaiting the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. David's reign is set. He, in Perek Ches, appoints his cabinet, all his ministers, and they're listed for us. And now he deals with one aspect of the past, and that's tonight, kindness and betrayal. In fact, this week and next week, we'll deal with two incidents of kindness and betrayal. Next week is more cruelty than betrayal, but this is the first one. What's remaining from the past? Well, there's a promise, a covenant that David had made with Yehonasan in that famous scene that we read on in the Haftarah of Machar Chodesh, when David was fleeing from Shaul. He didn't come to dinner. Rosh Chodesh dinner. So right before the perek starts, Yehonasan asks, "V'lo sachris es chazdecho me'im beisi ad olam." That you should never stop your kindness to my family forever. The kindness should continue. And in fact, this was ratified at the end of the Haftarah, that Yehonasan asked David that there should always be friendship between him, Beini, Bein Necho, Bein Zari, Bein Zaracho, Ad Olam. That myself, yourself, my descendants, your descendants, we should always look after one the other. And David then starts by seeking out the descendants of Shaul, and particularly Yonasan, in order to protect them. Let's look at number one. Number one is actually from Perek Dalid in Shmuel Beis, introduces us to Yehonasan's only son, V'Yehonasan ben Shaul ben Nechei Raglayim. Yehonasan, the son of Shaul, had a son who was a cripple. Ben Chameshinim Oya Bevo Shmuah Shaul V'Yehonasan Yisrael. He was 5 years old when the news came from Yisrael that his father, Yehonasan, and his grandfather, Shaul HaMelech, had been killed in battle. V'Tisei Om Nasa V'Tonus V'Yehi B'Chavzolonus. When they heard the news, when his nursemaid was holding him, heard the news that Yehonasan and Shaul had been killed in battle, so while holding him, she started to tremble, she ran, she dropped him, must have hit the base of his neck or something, and he was crippled, vayiposeach. He was lame his entire life. Ushmo Mephibosheth. His name, Yehonasan's son, was Mephibosheth. He had disappeared. Let's look at number two, which is our parak for tonight, parak test. Vayomer David, Hachi yesh od asher nosa levei Shaul. David says, is there anyone left, any survivors from the house of Shaul? Ve'aseh imo chesed bavur Yehonasan. And I will act kindly towards them for the sake of Yehonasan, who was Yosef's soulmate. Ulevei Shaul eved, Ushmo Siva, Vikrulo El David. Shaul's household had a servant still alive. The servant's name was Siva. Remember that name. David called him, and they began the dialogue. Now, what was David's motivation here? The simple pshat is that David acted lishma, as it sounds. He had nothing else. All his enemies had scattered or were defeated. So if you look at the Ralbag in number three, Vinei zachar shekvar haya meshiv nefesh, mitov nefesh, David, Very simple. This parak comes, Ralbag says, to teach us that David was now at peace. His soul was kindly disposed towards everyone. He was moved to act charitably towards the remnant of the house of Shaul.
And
therefore, as we'll see, the story continues, he brought Mephibosheth into his palace, fed him, kept him as part of the palace retinue, and gave him the fields, all the fields that belonged to Shaul. The Radak says a similar thing in number two. Tam zecher ze anyan ye bavur she nitzach ha-milchamos, v'yo b'mnucho, v'sideh ha-pkidim v'ha-mumunim som elibo.
He won his wars. He was at, what's that? Four, rather.
The Radak. He won his wars. He was at rest, meaning there was tranquility in the society. He had arranged his cabinet. So som elibo shvas Yonasan, he took to heart the oath he'd taken with Yonasan. Shemahaya bizarro adam ra'oi v'hagun haya mimaneoso kemosha omar lo Yonasan. If he would found someone worthy of being part of his cabinet, part of his government, he would take someone from Beishol in honor of Yonasan. The promise sheyase imo chesed bavur Yonasan. That's what the pasuk says. No one came forward. How come no one came forward? It's not hard to understand. They were afraid. They feared that this was all a trick, that David would just try to root out the remnants of the house of Shaul so he could have no rivals left and kill them. So they were afraid. So David really had good motivations. But, as we know, no good deed goes unpunished. Who said that? I looked it up. Claire Booth Luce. She's a playwright and a politician. But she said that's true. No good deed goes unpunished. You learn everything here. It's not just nothing. So they didn't come forward. Now, of course, they didn't come forward. This is an example of kol haposel b'mumo posel, as the Mishnah says. But we know in our lingo as projection. People project onto others their base motivations and their corrupt traits. So David had, in fact, won and was trying to be magnanimous. At least that's how we understand it. It's an act of chesed. But in fact, they did not perceive it as such. As we'll see, the story continues. David was not very sensitive, in fact, to the reality that he was not completely trusted by Beishol. And so he made a number of miscalculations. Good people are very often the last to catch on to the machinations of treacherous people because they don't look at the world that way. And that, in fact, is what happened with David and Tziva and Mephibosheth, which is the kindness and betrayal of tonight. In any event, Mephibosheth wasn't hiding. David realized there was a servant, an Evet Kanani, from the house of Shaul named Tziva. He called him to the palace, and he came. Hata Tziva v'yomer avdecho. We're back at number two. V'yomer hamelech, ha'efes, od ish levei Shaul, are there no people left from the house of Shaul? V'asei mo chesed elokim, and I will perform with them a godly kindness. V'yomer Tziva l'amelech, Tziva said, od bein lihonason, nechei raglayim. There is one son left. One cheraglaim, one lame son of Yehonah's son. Vayomer lo hamelech efohu. The king said, where is he? Vayomer tziva lamelech, hinehu beis machir ben Amiel. He's in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, below Dvar. Lo Dvar. Now, the simple pshat is Lo Dvar is a place, but the Gemara in Shabbos Darshins, we'll see it a little later on, Amdaf Nunvav Amad Aleph, that Tziva was disparaging Mephibosheth. He said lo devar as an insult. What lo devar mean? Literally, nothing. There is a son, he's nechei raglayim, and he really amounts to nothing. Rashi there says, he was telling David HaMelech, eino chacham b'Torah. He's not a Talmud Chacham, which turns out to be false. He's not a Talmud Chacham, so really he's nothing. And what Tziva was doing, that was essentially saying, if you want to reach out to Beishol,
and show the rest of society that peace reigns, then forget Mephibosheth. He's nothing. Who should you make peace with? Me. Even though he's never Kanani. But yet he was the head, so to speak, the chargé d'affaires of the house of household of Shaul, that remnant. He had a large family himself. See, he was putting himself forward as a representative of that household. If you want to deal kindly with Beit Shaul, Tzivoth is the man. David resists this. Vayishlach haMelech David vayikochei mibeis mechir ben Amiel milo devar. David sends messengers, and they take Mephibosheth from Beis Machir. Vayavo Mephibosheth ben Yonasan ben Shaul el David. Mephibosheth, characterized with all his names, pedigree, son of Yonasan, son of Shaul, came to David. Vayipol al pano vayishtachu. And he fell on his face and bowed, prostrated himself before David. Vayomer David Mephibosheth, Vayomer hine avdecha. Here I am. Vayomer lo David, al tira, don't be afraid. So now David assuages whatever concerns he had. Ki aso easeh imcho chesed b'avu Yehonasan avicha. I will deal kindly with you, like for the sake of your father Yehonasan. Vashivosi lecha es kol shdei shol avicha. I'm going to return to you the entire state, all the assets of Shaul your father. And you will always eat bread at my table. You'll be a ben bayis by me. In so doing, David is fulfilling in his own mind the oath he made to Yehonasan. Vayishtachu, he bows again. Vayomer, me'avdecho, what is your servant? That you pay attention to a dead dog such as me. The famous phrase in Hebrew, Kelev Hames, it's from here. So the king now calls the Tziva, whom the Novi describes as Nar Shaul, to put him in his place, Shaul's lad, and says to him, everything that belonged to Shaul in his household I've given to the son of your master. And you will work that land, you, your children, your servants, and you'll bring him bread. And Mephibosheth, the son of your master, will eat bread with me. The Ben Adonecha means this. Nechei Raglai, Mephibosheth himself had a son named Michal. So David told Tziva, you'll be responsible for providing nourishment, sustenance to Michal, the son of Mephibosheth, grandson of Yehonasan, but Mephibosheth himself will eat with me. So Navi says Tziva had 15 sons and 20 servants. Vayomer Tziva laMelech, Tziva says, whatever you command your servant, I will do. Mephibosheth will eat at my table, like one of the king's sons. Now, in fact, that's not what David had said. And you see the dynamic that's taking place here. Let's look first at number four. Let's look at number four. The end of the Radak. Beit Shaul had an Eved. The Radak says it was an Eved Kanani. Now what's happening here is David is acting as a Baal Chesed. What's he doing? He's giving all of Shaul's property to Shaul's grandson. So you say, what's the Chesed? It doesn't belong to him. So Radak says, no. Later on we'll see he gives property to Tziva. What is he giving? It's not even his to give away to begin with. It's the command of the king. The king really has eminent domain over property. That's how the Radak justified it. If you look at the Radak in number 5, it's similar. Ki David zocha b'chol nachla Shaul l'fisha ishboshes uvei Shaul hoyamordim b'malchus. If you think back early in Shmuel Bey's, Ishboshes had been killed. Ishboshes was another son of Shaul, not to be confused with our Mephibosheth. So he was a Moreid b'malchus. He was killed by one of David's aides. Ki adu haya b'chol Yisrael ki David haya melech achrei mo Shaul. Everybody knew David was the king. But Ishboshes, in fact, reigned as king for a few years. Even the people knew he was Nimshach al-Pi Hashem. Amari b'malchus, kol nechosav nischayvu, whatever he owns is taken over by the king. And that's what the Pasuk says, v'etnolchos beis adonecho, v'kevan shakol shelo, u'menadin zocha bo, that's why he was able to give it to Mephibosheth. That's chesed gadol. It really now belongs to David, but he in fact is giving it over to Mephibosheth and family. Look at 7. Rashi makes the same point. Hamelech rashay lahaver nachlo. The king has the right to do that. That's mishpat melucha. So really it belonged to David, and therein lies the chesed. Now we have the beginning. So the story ends. It seems everything is harmonious. Mephibosheth, except for one thing, two subtle points. At the beginning of the perek, Siva very slyly proposed himself as the true heir to the property of Shaul, and that was rejected by David. And towards the end, when Mephibosheth is brought into David's palace, and David says, he'll eat at my table, Siva sort of worms his way in and says, no, Mephibosheth ochel shulchani, he'll eat at my table. So what's the rivalry here? The Radak says in number 6, on Pasuk Yud Aleph, af al pi she Mephibosheth ochel shulchani, כאחד מבני המלך, ולסרח לכל דבר הזה, אף על פי כן, עשה כמו שציוויסני, לעבוד כל הנחל מפיבושס ולבונו. Even though מפיבושס can really eat by me, I'll take care of him like I always did, even in hiding, nevertheless, I'll respect the fact that that's what you want. Others say, ומפיבושס אוכל שולחני דברי דוד, that David had contradicted Siva, who was arguing, and said no, Mephibosheth is mine, and you'll take care of Micha. Now, there is a rivalry here. That rivalry is between Mephibosheth, who it seems can't take care of himself, can't defend himself, and Siva. Mephibosheth was an onav. He was self-deprecating, kelev hames. He was aware that his usefulness to society lay not in normal physical pursuits or conquests, but in something else. So what was Mephibosheth known for? Talmud Torah. So if you look at number 8, the Gemara in Brachas Dav Dalet Amud Aleph speaks very highly of him. The David, Shomer Nafshi Ki Chosid Ami. Kach Amar David Mekadosh Baruch Hu. David said before God, Ribono Shel Olam, Lo Chosid Ani, am I not pious? V'lo'od Ela Kol Ma Shani Oseh Ani Nimlach B'Mephibosheth Rabbi. Whatever I do, I always consult first with my Rebbe Mephibosheth. Vomerlo, Mephibosheth Rabbi, Yafe Danti, Yafe Chiyafti, Yafe Zochisi, Yafe Tiharti, Yafe Timesi. Did I rule properly? Whatever David did as the Melech, even in terms of Halacha, he would ask Mephibosheth for his Haskama, his agreement. I'm Rishu ben Breder of Edi, my craw, Vadabra Bedosecha, Negan Melachim Veloi Vosh, I'll speak in your testimonies before kings without being embarrassed. Tana, Lo Mephibosheth Shmo, Elo Ish Boshesh Shmo, Veloma Nikra Shmo Mephibosheth, Shoy Mevaish Pnei David Balacha. Why was he called Mephibosheth? Boshesh from his mouth, literally, because Mephibosheth was such a great Talmud Chacham, he could shame David in Halacha. So that's why David wanted him in his house, not just Chesed for Yonah's son. David wanted to learn Torah from him, so he brought him in, and David, of course, had sufficient humility to recognize that he could learn even from Mephibosheth, who ostensibly was a rival to him. L'fichach zocha David v'yotzeh menu kilov. That's why David was zochet to kilov, one of his sons. I think he's one of the four people the Gemara said died without sin. There's also a great Talmud Chacham, Amar B'Yochanan. Lo kilov shmo Daniel shmo. Why was he called Kilov? He was a killer in the Beis Medrash. It's because he could shame Mephibosheth in Halacha. Mephibosheth could shame David, but David's son Kilov could shame if he voshes. How did that come about? It came about because David humbled himself and brought in a superior Talmud Chacham to learn with, to be guided by. And so that relationship produced even greater Talmud Chacham in his son Kilov. So Mephibosheth made it his work just to sit and learn Torah and teach Torah and support David. And that seems a very nice story. But Ziba condescended to his master and undermined him and disparaged him by saying, no, he'll eat at my table, al shulchani, and I will take care of him. This rivalry resurfaced later on with troubling results. And for that, we have to skip to Perek Tes Zayin, what we have in our sheets as number 9, beginning at Perek Tes Zayin Pasuk Aleph. Now, what happened here, we're really fast-forwarding, but I want to look at this as one whole entity. A lot of things happened in the next few prophets, which we'll get to in the coming months. Among those things is the rebellion of Avshalom, one of the sons of David. The rebellion reached such a level that David had to flee Yerushalayim for his life. He left Yerushalayim. As we know, when a crisis occurs, personal crisis, one sees who his real friends are and who his not-so-real friends are. That's life. So the question now is, where's Mephibosheth? Mephibosheth is in the palace, presumably. Is he on David's side? Is he on Avshalom's side? So that's how Perek Tes Zayin begins. The David of Avar Me'at Meharosh, David moved just past the summit, fleeing Yerushalayim, he's in the mountains. V'hinei Tziva Nar Mephibosheth Likrasot. Tziva, the lad of Mephibosheth, approaches, and he's bringing with him Semed Chamorim Chavushim, donkeys laden with Masayim Lechem, Me'at Tzimukim, Me'at Kayetz, Nevel Yoyin, 200 breads, 100 clusters of raisins, 100 portions of dried figs, and a container of wine. Everyone had dinner, I hope, already, because this sounds very appetizing. So the king said to Tziva, why do you have all this? Tziva said, I'm bringing the donkeys, leves hamelech, lerko, for the king's household, and the lechem, and the wine, and the lechem, and the dessert, the figs, to eat. And the yayin lishtos, I'm bringing you food because you're fleeing. Vayomer hamelech, va'ayeh ben adonecho. So David said to Tziva, where is your master's son? Where's Mephibosheth? Vayomer Tziva la'melech, in one of the treacherous acts in Shmuel Bez, hineyosh, he says, and we'll see he says falsely, hineyosh shei b'Yerushalayim. He's sitting back in Yerushalayim. He's back in the palace. Kiyamar Hayom, because he said today, Kiyamar, because he said, Hayom Yashivuli Beis Yisrael Es Mamluchos Avi. Today the house of Israel will restore my father's kingdom to me. What is Mephibosheth's ostensible rationale? David is on the outs. Avshalom has already said he's going to kill David. I mean, it's hard to imagine, but we'll get to that story later on this year. Avshalom kills David. David's a popular king. What's going to happen to Avshalom? David's supporters are going to kill him. What are they going to look for then? To look for what's perceived to be a more stable monarch. Go back to the house of Shaul. So Tziva says, this really is Mephibosheth's plan. That he is subtly, for public consumption, he's in the middle, he's not taking any sides. But really, Tziva says, he wants you to fail, to be killed, and have the throne usurped, because he sees this is his only way to recapture the monarchy. How does David respond? V'yomer ha-melech l'tziva, hinei l'cho kol asher l'mephibosheth. I hereby give you everything that Mephibosheth owns. V'yomer tziva, Hishtachavesi, I bow down to you. Em tzochein be'einecho adoni hamelech, that I have found favor, may I find favor in the eyes of the king. Well, one question we have to ask ourselves is that how did David accept the Lashon Hara of Tziva? That the Gemara will discuss, we'll get to it in a few moments. But really, Tziva's the one who wants the Melucha, because he knows that Mephibosheth can't reign. He can't be the king, but he'll be, you know, the puppeteer. He'll be behind the scenes, controlling everything. But now he's Zoch, at least, to Mephibosheth's property, which gives him a tremendous advantage. So David hears this, he gives all Mephibosheth's wealth to Tziva. You turn the page for a moment, the Malbim says in number 15, ask the question, Ech hemen David ledivrei Tziva? V'lo ola libo ki lishono kitamer lutash aser remiyah? How did David accept the Lashon Hara? It's Chafetz Chaim 101. Someone tells you Lashon Hara, you have to reject it. Can't believe it. So the Malbim explains, Nevuah. It's strange that David is overwhelmed by Tziva's generosity in bringing him the donkeys laden with supplies. Well, why didn't anyone else support David? We know, by the way, that David lost his majority. That's why. That most people, popular opinion, the polls, the intelligentsia, the elitist society, they wanted Avshalom to be the king. So Tziva came, those who supported David fled. Those who remained in Yerushalayim, so they were afraid to project themselves as supporters of David. The only one who did is this Eved, Hazeh Hamalshin al Adonov, who's slandering his master. Chashav la pilas Adonov mimonavshech. Let's look at the reasoning. Whatever argument he makes, he thinks he's going to succeed. Lifnei David higid ki anos en kolzos. To David, he says that he's giving all of this, right? Because he's trying to show David that he's a supporter. Where's Tziva going after this? Go back to Yerushalayim. Avshalom will say, he didn't bring anything to David, Mephibosheth did. So now it works out very well. If David wins, Tziva's ingratiated himself with David. If Avshalom wins, Tziva's ingratiated himself with Avshalom. Can't have it any better. Not to mention what he said was Mephibosheth's own plan, which of course was false, but nonetheless, Malbim explains that also. The next one, lo holach bil pnei Avshalom, lo levrach im David. Ki choshev she'acha she'erog Avshalom es aviv, yedinu Yisrael kevin soramor, toshav amachuz levei shol. That was his plan, as the Malbim spells out for us. He thought that he would stay in the middle, Mephibosheth, choose no sides, do something which would tend to favor one or the other sufficiently so that whoever won, he'd be able to say, I was with you. And if it didn't happen, if in fact Avshalom killed David and the people judged Avshalom as a rebel, so they would say, we need to go back to the calmer time of Shaul HaMelech. That is what happened here. Now, the story doesn't end, because if you turn back to number 10, it continues in Perek Yotes. David, in fact, had accepted the Lashon Hara, but what always happens is that eventually the facts come to light. Who appears? Indeed, in Perek Yotes, Pasuk Chafei, David comes back to Yerushalayim, Umefivoshes ben Shaul Yerad Legras HaMelech. He goes down to greet the king. V'lo asar aglov, but he came down in a strange way. He had not bathed his feet, meaning he was filthy. He did not trim his mustache. He had not laundered his clothing. From the day David left until today. Meaning, Mephibosheth, who considered David his Talmud, not only his Melech, observed Avelus. From the time David was dethroned, so to speak, until the time he returned. David didn't know that. Vayehi ki vayu rishon akras ha-melech, vayom lo ha-melech, loma lo halachta imi Mephibosheth. Not why didn't you come to greet me, why didn't you go with me? Why didn't you support me publicly, Mephibosheth? Why weren't you on my side? Vayomar, adani ha-melech, aviri money. My lord the king, my servant tricked me. Kimar of Zechov, your servant said, Ech bisholi achamor v'kavolo v'elecha es hamelech ki fiseh chavdecho. Because my servant said, I'll saddle up the donkey and ride upon it and go with the king, because he himself, Mephibosheth, cannot ride. Vayiragel ba'avdecha, but he slandered me, El Adoni HaMelech. V'Adoni HaMelech kemalach Elokim. My master, the king, is like an angel of God to me. V'asayato be'necho, you do what's proper in your eyes. Ki lo hoyo chol be'savi, ki im anshe moves l'Adoni HaMelech. Vatosha says, Avdecha bochle shulchanecha. Everyone in my family wanted to kill you, and you left only me, who eats at your table. Umayeshli od tzedaka, vilizok od el melech. What further justification do I have to cry more to the king? Meaning, if Vatosha says, you have acted honorably towards me, so why would you suspect me of acting dishonorably towards you? Vayomel ha-melech, loma tedaber od varecha, why do you keep talking? Omarti, I said, Atovit Siva Tachleku es Hasodeh. Strange. That bears understanding. I have already said, I declare, you and Siva will divide the property. Now note, in the first selection we had from Perek Tes, everything was given to Mephibosheth. In Perek Tes Zayin, David gave everything to Siva. Now in Perek Tes, David says, you'll split it. Now why would he split it? If Mephibosheth has convinced him that Tziva is a liar, so why would he give him half the property? That we'll return to, but Mephibosheth complains. V'yom Mephibosheth el ha-melech, gam es ha-kol yikach. You know what? You give me half of my own property. Let him take all of it. Acharei asher ba adoni ha-melech b'shalom el beiso. Since my lord the king has arrived safely to his house, he is angry. He has the last word. Turn the page. And now we have to look at the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Nun Vav Amid Aleph and Nun Vav Amid Beis. It's a long selection. We'll understand something about the story. The Gemara is talking about the statement of Chazal that Kol Omer David Chota Ein El Atah. A person who thinks David sinned, we usually think of the episode with Bathsheba. You're wrong. Ein El Atah, you're just wrong. You're not a Picarius, you're just wrong. So the Gemara says, how could you say he didn't sin when in fact, Gufo Rav Amar, he built David Lashon Hara. David accepted, believed Lashon Hara that was said about Mephibosheth. Dichsiv, Vayomel HaMelech Eifohu, Vayomitziv HaMelech Hineu, Beis Mechir Ben Amiel, Belodvar. And this is where Rashi says, Lodvar was an insult, that he's not a Talmud Chacham. Michti Chazya Deshakrohu. Now David saw once Mephibosheth came to live in the palace. And he saw that he's a fantastic Talmud Chacham. He knew that Tziva was a liar. So ki hadar al shani lovei, my time a kibleminei. Once Tziva then badmouthed David, Mephibosheth, that he was supporting Avshalom, really. So why did David believe him? He already had no credibility. So Rav said that, in fact, was the sin, one sin of David. And they go through the psukim that we just read through. David asked, Ayeh ben Adonecha? And Tziva said, he's in Yerushalayim. Umanolam dekibel minei, how do we know that he accepted it? Because he said, Hinei l'chokol, shel Mephibosheth. You take whatever he has. I believe you, and he's nothing. Ushmuel amar, skip down the line, Shmuel said, Lo kibel David lashon hara. David did not accept this lashon hara about Mephibosheth. So the evidence on the surface looks quite incriminating, because from the psukim it's clear, at least it seems clear, that he did accept what Tziva said, because he gave him all Mephibosheth's property. If he didn't believe him, why would he give it to him? So Shmuel says, no. Dvarim hanikarim hu chazabei. He saw certain signs. He saw certain signs in Mephibosheth that he did not like, that he did not trust. For example, David felt vindicated when Mephibosheth finally appeared upon David's return to Yerushalayim, and he came unbathed, untrimmed, with the dirty clothing. V'chsiv, v'hiki vo Yerushalayim nekras ha-melech, v'yom la-melech, lom lo-lach mi Mephibosheth, v'yom la-melech, adiri moni, so he had a whole excuse. I couldn't go, my servant slandered me to you, you're malach Elokim, you do what you want. And David said, Why do you keep talking? Atovit Siva Tachlakuas Asodeh. You and Siva will divide the field. You take everything. What were the signs? Amar lo. Ani amarti masai tavo b'shalom. I, Mephibosheth, was always concerned, when is David going to return to Yerushalayim in peace? Vato selikach. And now you're doing this for me. Lo olecho yesh li taromes. I have no grievance against you, David. Elamisha heviacha b'shalom. I have a grievance against the one who brought you back in peace. Meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was his grievance. So in fact, David saw some sign that in fact Mephibosheth's heart was not fully with him. He was playing somewhat of a duplicitous game because David did not accept it. Now, you could read it one way or the other, but the Gemara continues with a proof. In Divrei Hayomim, Ben Yehonasan, this Mephibosheth is called Meriv Baal, Master of Quarrels. V'chi Meriv Baal Shmo, is that his name? Hello Mephibosheth Shmo. Elamitoch she'asa Merivon Baalov, Yotzta Basko Varmalo, since he was quarreling with his masters, with David, Basko, the heavenly echo rang out and said, Natza Bar Natza, quarrelsome one, the son of quarrelsome one. You are quarrelsome, we know. And your father, because Shaul went, Adir Amalek, Vayarev Vanochal, Aliske Nochal, he complained against God, he shouldn't have to destroy Amalek. So it seems what? Shmuel says that he did not sin, but in fact he accepted what Siva said because there was truth in it, and he responded properly, and that's why he divided it, because he couldn't tell fully who was telling the truth. Whereas Rav says, no, he accepted Lashon Hara, and that was a sin, and he was wrong. And Rav continues with words we'll have to look back on in a few minutes. Amar Yudam Arav, Vishoa Sha'omar David Mephibosheth, the moment when David said to Mephibosheth, Atovit Sivot Hachlakuas HaSodeh, the two of you will share the estate of Shaul HaMelech, Yotzta Basko V'Amalo Basko rang out and said, Rechavam V'Yeravam Yachlakuas HaMelucha. You're splitting, you're dividing the property of Shaul, so you should know, your descendant Rechavam, Shlomo's son, will have his own kingdom split. And Yeravam will rule as Melech Yisrael. Further, Amar Rav Yudam Arav, Ilmole lo kibel David lashon hara, if David had not accepted this slander about Mephibosheth, lo nechlo kol malchus beis David, David's kingdom would never have divided. V'lo avdi Yisrael avodah zarah, we never would have worshipped avodah zarah as in the time of Yeravam. V'lo galinu me'artzeinu, we never would have been exiled from our land. Wow, those are some consequences from a very innocent story. Rashi says in 13, "Lo'ov the Yisrael v'Rizara shayidei shenechleku amalchus hemed Yeravam hagalim." Because the kingdom split, Yeravam put up idols to prevent people going to Yerushalayim. Shalayal Yisrael Yerushalayim v'mashalto shirachavam. So Jews were forced to worship idols because of the idolatry. Were eventually exiled. Now in 12, Rashi in the Gemara explains the whole story back and forth. But the basics now we know. David felt vindicated, but should he have been vindicated? That's a different issue. David felt that he did not intentionally accept Lashon Hara, because all the indications, logic, circumstances, assorted facts, all pointed to Mephibosheth's guilt. But the fact is that he wasn't guilty. And because he wasn't guilty, that's the price that we pay for it. Now, this inability to unify his people and to bring Mephibosheth back portended a greater split, as the Gemara tells us. So the question is, and with this we'll summarize, what exactly is happening here? What is this story talking about? So if you look at number 14, 14, 16, and 17 are selections from Oz Melech of Rav Yigal Ariel. He explains the whole story in a way that it's important. I mean, it puts it in the proper light. The story is somewhat equivocal. We're dealing here with human beings, and human beings are not unidimensional. Human beings are multifaceted. and people have different agendas and interests and hidden motivations, which we don't always know, and I think we all recognize, even we ourselves don't always know what unconscious motivations we have to do different things. So people are an amalgam of good traits and bad traits, of virtues and vices, and here it's all true. Mephibosheth presents himself to us as what? As Talmid Chacham, true, but otherwise as a sad case, a person who gets nothing out of life because of his physical conditions. See, right, beginning at 14. Shnei Shemot, Shnei Panim Yesh Mephibosheth. First glance, he's righteous, he's innocent, ish tom umiskein, simple person, unfortunate, haneshaka lo'ovel b'chapo. He didn't do anything wrong, but he was born with a terrible condition. Ela she'David savur ki tachat masechet hamiskein mistater adam mimurmar, tachechon umardon. David felt that underneath this veneer, he's disgruntled. He's a tachachon, he's a troublemaker. He's a plotter. He's rebellious. So what was David doing? So David also had a dual motivation. On the one hand, Bavur Yonason Avicha, he wants to do chesed with Yonason's heir, like he had promised Yonason. On the other hand, in the immortal words of the Godfather, you keep your friends close and your enemies closer. So to have Mephibosheth in the palace, it's good for David too. It's a good political move. So it neutralizes Beishol, because here they're being honored, but they have no pretensions to the throne. David did what he could to enable Mephibosheth to live a quality life, but in fact this encroached on Tziva's own plans and Tziva's own self-definition. That Tziva saw himself as the head of the household now. Only person remaining is Mephibosheth, who can't take care of himself. So he had a large family, 15 children, 20 servants. So he saw himself as more than an Eved. There are two aspects of Mephibosheth that Rav Ariel mentions. In the next paragraph, you see the paradox. Yesh valimum, there's certain people handicapped, but they overcome it, and they live normal lives. They don't blame anyone. These are the cards I'm dealt, and they maximize their potential. Some people succumb to the weakness. Paralysis really suits them. Inactivity, passivity suits them. In their own eyes, they're always innocent. They don't do anything. I'm in a terrible physical state. I can't help myself, so it's everyone else's problem. Their stumbles, their failures, are never their fault. So which is Mephibosheth? That's the problem. We don't really know. He seems on the surface to be a person who lives his life maximizing his potential. But David recognizes whatever he is, he's also Yehonasan's son, and he's Shaul's grandson. And if you notice, back in number 10, Perek Yutes, Pasuk Chafei, when David returns to Yerushalayim, who greets him? What does the Pasuk say? Umephibosheth ben Shaul. He's not ben Shaul. He's ben Yehonasan. Why does it say ben Shaul? Because David suspected that he saw himself really as ben Shaul. Not the miskain, the unfortunate child of Yehonasan, but the heir to the throne of Shaul HaMelech. That's how he saw himself. That was David's suspicion. We have to understand what he is. David, on the surface, also deals properly with him. Grants him an absolute pardon, gives him the property of Beishol, brings him into the house, does everything right. Mephibosheth, though, is caught. He's caught between two powerful people. Of course, the king is always the most powerful. But on the other hand, Tziva as well. Bisofo shel davar, we see Mephibosheth can't even control his own servant. So how is he supposed to have aspirations for the rulership of Israel? So David thought he would co-opt him into his own household. But maybe even David was not fully trusting. That's the machlokas in the Gemara between Rav and Shmuel.
Now, if you look at the bottom 16, David saw signs. Dvarim ani karim, in the words of the Gemara. Rim ba'alil, he saw clearly, ketan hunosali al gabo et natal beit shol kulo. He sees he has a royal bearing. Calls himself Mephibosheth ben Shaul, loke ben Yonasan avo, yesh kesher, galui osamui, ben himanuto, shalayareish hayachid leveit Shaul, milit yatsev al nemanei David beit minusato leven kilat shemi. David sees a problem. Whether it's latent or revealed, he sees some connection between Shaul's only heir and his reluctance to come out openly for David in the dispute with Avshalom, and the fact that maybe there's something to his claims to the monarchy. He doesn't know. David is trusting, but the question he asks is a good one. Lama lo halachta imi Mephibosheth? When crunch time came, where were you? When crunch time came, so in fact, where was he? David saw signs. Signs meaning, in a legal sense, probable cause that Mephibosheth should be suspected. He didn't publicly support David against Avshalom, and this was a crisis that demanded that a person choose a side. So David was aggrieved, even though Mephibosheth was his Rebbe, and even if Mephibosheth was a close supporter of his. Not to choose sides when the leader is under siege is tacit support for the insurgents. You can't be indifferent when the Melech is under attack. And that's what David saw. So Mephibosheth in 17, he has good answers. Mitareitz et atzmoetev, bidvarim tovim, nichochim, umitukim. He says the right things. He's again very self-abasing. He says exactly what David should want to hear. He gives a good explanation. Avdiri money. Here I am coming before you, dressed almost as an ovel. That's how much I wanted to come back. You didn't believe me. You believed the Eved who slandered me. I'm the only one from Beis Shaul ever protected you. I'm thankful for your kindness. What else can I say to you? So David says, why do you keep talking? Mephibosheth rejects that. He rejects that as an insult, as if it's about money. It's not about money. It's about trust. But Mephibosheth had an annoying quality that Rav Ariel mentions. Adai mitakesh Mephibosheth al zchut hamila achrona. He always wants to get the last word in. It's hard to argue with someone who's in a difficult physical state. Always wants to get the last word in. In fact, that's how the parak ends. He gets the last word in. You do what you want. Justice is on my side. But that we don't know. He's stubborn enough. He insists on his righteousness. He's the aggrieved tzaddik. He's a kadosh hameuneh, the afflicted holy person. He turns the other cheek. He's fine. His servant is not. And you, David, you're not acting properly. Gam David, the Gam HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Einam B'Seder. Even God is not right in this. Why? Because as Mephibosheth said in the language of the Gemara, my problem is with Mi Sheviachov B'Shalom, the one who returns you in peace, God. Because if he's protecting you, you who doesn't see the situation clearly, who propagates injustice, there's something wrong there as well. There's something else too. Because you see, Mephibosheth argues a little too much, a little too vehemently, until David suspects him even more. And this, Rav Ariel refers to as a very slippery rationalization that he's offering. Ach zoche mitzad Mephibosheth tzidkanut chalak lako. Very slippery rationalization that he's using. So he doesn't appreciate the loss of property, doesn't appreciate the lack of support. So who's right? You can't judge ultimately, but you see from one perspective at least, Rav's opinion that David was wrong. David's criticized. Look at the last paragraph. Aval Chazal ginu et David al kach b'charifut. Chazal castigated David very sharply, very strong terms. Because of this, your kingdom will split. Because of this, Jews worshipped idols and were exiled from our land. Meaning what? Rubakach
chulshav gam b'etnagut hakula. They saw in this a weakness, a defect in David's leadership. Mithiboshes hu mitrad achlos sakana. A mitareid. Mithiboshes was a nudnik, but he wasn't a danger. Ilu hayad David mitgaber marichaf. If David would prevail and exercise a little patience, yachol hayal lakeid et Yisrael b'ofen shalem. He could have united everybody, David. Lakeid et habatim shetahom nifara b'einem. Ulegabesh et Beit David, Beit Shul, Beis Yudah, Beis Yosef. David could have united the two homes, the two households, the two royal houses of Israel. That of Shaul and David, that of Yehud and Yosef. He could have done that. Ach kapten uto kan. To be kapten is to be very grudging. It's grudgingness here. V'charitzat adin alfechet echshad l'uvda. He has suspicions. But he acts on his suspicions as if they're facts. Mansicha et hakera betachaluka shemein shiftei Yisrael. Kera shesofo litgalot bidorei rabbaim kedavar shein lo takana. He justifies, in a sense, the tear, the split, the division that will take place in shiftei Yisrael, which has not yet healed. David's criticized because at the beginning of the night, he had attempted to bring Beis Shaul into the palace to unify the people. But because, as Rav says, he accepted Lashon Hara, because he may have had some suspicion about Mephibosheth's true motivations, so in the end, Beis Shaul was marginalized, but they were not co-opted, and eventually they would reassert themselves. When? That's Yeravam ben Nevat, that's Malchus Beis Yosef, that's the Malchus Ephraim, Malchus Yisrael was a division, a breakaway from Malchus Yehuda. When the split comes, we know why it comes. Because David was not able in the end to heal the breach. Could he have done it another way? In hindsight, he always do it another way. Would it have been different? So at least Rav seems to think it would have been. Shmuel says not. That's part of the mystery of history. Leadership, we know, is tenuous. Every move is very sensitive. It's fraught with ramifications. Beyond the immediate, some ramifications last for generations. In this episode of kindness and betrayal, the kindness appears to us overwhelming, magnanimous, taking the son of his enemy, or the grandson of his enemy, into his own palace, and feeding him, and nurturing him, and caring for him, and giving over property to him as well. Betrayal, though, comes also. The betrayal of Tziva, Mephibosheth, the suspicions, the doubts, the attacks, the speculations, the impugning of the credibility of righteousness of Mephibosheth. In the end, David decides to split the difference, not knowing on which side morality lies. Atovit Tziva, Tachleku es Asodeh, you'll divide amongst yourselves. When you start with divisions, they're very difficult to heal. That becomes a story not of the Malchus Beis David, but that becomes the story of the first Jewish commonwealth, which had a split, which did not heal, but has not healed, as Navi Yecheskel says, it's only in the future, when Eitz Yehudah and Eitz Yosef will again rejoin and become one tree ruling over a united Klal Yisrael. I thank you very much.